Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome back as our guest our friend Ted Nesi, the political economics reporter for WPRI.com. Thanks for joining us, Ted.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, Ian.
It sure is. And we'll start with the Democratic primary for governor between leading candidates Clay Pell, Angel Taveras, and Gina Raimondo. Polling shows this has remained a close race despite Raimondo's fundraising advantage, and the candidates are generally pretty similar on the issues. Ted, do you think voters will ultimately decide this Democratic gubernatorial primary on whom they consider most likable and trustworthy?
At this point, I think they may decide on who spends the most money. We've now had more than $10 million spent in this race. Gina Raimondo leading the pack. I think she spent over $4 million just since April. Clay Pell right behind with $3.3. Angel Taveras way behind, a little under $2 million. And I know people don't always like to think about how much money matters in politics, but it's the truth, and that has allowed Raimondo and Pell to get their advertising message across to folks at home and really persuade voters. I also think, you know, in each case, I'm not sure they've been able to differentiate themselves super strongly. We've never seen, there haven't been a ton of polls, but we haven't seen anyone run away with it. Even Gina Raimondo leading in the WPRI Journal poll only had like a 5-point lead. Nobody's anywhere near 40% or more.
Scott, do you agree that money will be decisive in this primary? And do you think Angel Taveras, who has lost votes to Clay Pell, made a strategic mistake by not going after Pell earlier in the primary?
You know, I think that the money is obviously not everything in politics, but it's an awful lot of things. And we're seeing that. And I've talked to people inside the Taveras camp. They thought they could do this with $2 to $2.5 million. And it turned out that they didn't. What you have to understand about Raimondo is that she's been doing this since day one. She's been raising money since day one. She knew she was going to run for governor, I think, after about 2 months as general treasurer. She reached out to the business community with Engage Rhode Island, raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, then ginned up the fundraising. In Rhode Island, you have a $1,000 limit. It's per calendar year. So what you do is you collect hundreds of thousands of dollars and you go back to the same people in the next calendar year.
What about the question about Pell's impact? And we've seen him take votes away from Taveras. Did Taveras make a mistake by not going after Pell earlier?
It's tough. You know, people don't like negativity. But here is to your point. It's almost like a Clausewitz fighting a two-front war. You've got a primary where 50% of the voters are self-identified liberals. I mean, that's unusual anywhere in the country, except in New England, probably, and maybe California. But the thing about Taveras is he is getting beat on both sides. You know, he's got Gina on his right, and he's got Pell on his left, and it's a tough place to be.
Let's get Maureen in here. Do you think money will be decisive in this primary, and what do you make of the dynamic with Pell taking votes away from Taveras?
Well, I certainly think money is going to matter, and I mean, Pell is right up there as far as Gina. I mean, he's not far behind, and this last-minute infusion of money is about what the name of the game is now, and that is turnout. He has evidently a very aggressive ground game. And we assume that Gina has won, and we expect in an urban environment that Taveras will be able to get out the vote.
Let's stick with Maureen here. The Republican side of the gubernatorial primary was initially seen as being very favorable for Cranston Mayor Alan Fung, and it looks now like a very close race between Fung and moderate party founder Ken Block, who became a Republican. How did this change and become such a pitched battle after Fung was seen having an early advantage?
Well, Fung made some missteps, and I think generally speaking, in terms of his presentation, Block was very effective. The big question here is, who is going to vote in the Republican primary? Where obviously, Block appeals to independent voters. And the question is, how many independent voters are going to go off and vote in the Republican primary? When, let's face it, there's a lot more action happening in the Democratic primary. One of the things about Republican primaries, go back to Lincoln Allman, there was a last-minute surge for him, and his ultimate victory in that race was a real surprise. So we could see a surprise here, but we have to think about the ground game and assume that Fung has a good one.
Scott, as Maureen said, we've seen Republican primary voters favor outsider candidates like Lincoln Amon over Ron Maitley in the 90s and Don Carcieri over Jim Bennett in 2002. Which of these two Republicans do you think would be stronger against the Democratic candidate in November?
I think Fung is the strongest candidate against a Democrat for a simple reason. Some of those liberal labor voters, the way he dealt with things in Cranston, and they know what to expect. It's predictable. Block, of course, is not. Now, I think Block's done a very good job in the sloganeering aspect of this, reaching out to some Tea Party types, some anti-government types, people who are disaffected. I'm looking at Cranston and Warwick, and I think that Fung has to run up a very, very strong vote in those communities to win this thing. I also think under the radar, he has the endorsement of the Right to Life Committee, and that's 5,000 or 6,000 votes there.
Ted, you've noted some contortions in how Block and Fung both didn't start out as Republicans. What are your observations about the quest for Republican votes in this primary?
Yeah, a lot of political cross-dressing in this election, Ian, with Pell was a young Republican. We now know Alan Fung was voting in Democratic primaries a decade ago. Ken Block, a moderate who backed Obama. I think that's part of why this is in flux. You know, neither of these gentlemen, Mayor Fung and Ken Block, are perfect vessels for Republicanism in 2014. You know, they're not movement conservatives. And so in both cases, voters are having to say, all right, they've both had apostasies. Which ones are less of an issue and which one do I trust more in the governor's office?
The Democratic primary for mayor in Providence is gaining a lot of attention due to the looming of independent candidate Buddy Cianci in the November race. The primary has been a little bit like an Agatha Christie mystery with various candidates dropping by the wayside. Ted, we see a contrast in outward appearances between Michael Solomon, more of an old school guy, and Jorge Lorza, a charismatic Latino professor. How do you see the two of them stacking up on primary day?
Again, always tough without public polling in a race. I'm going to give a shout out to my colleague Dan McGowan, who's covered this race closely. And, from talking to him, Michael Solomon has built a good campaign. You guys at Rhode Island PR have covered that, too. He's got support all over the city. He's worked hard with Latinos, knowing how crucial that constituency is and knowing he could face a Latino opponent. And Elorza, unlike Angel Taveras 4 years ago, has had to ramp up that East Side, South Side coalition much faster because Brett Smiley was in this race for so long. So I think the question is, can Elorza and his forces, including those who were with Smiley, pull together fast enough and get the message across to people to back him? I still think Solomon's the favorite.
Solomon did get a very early start on his fundraising and trying to line up supporters. Is that going to rule the day, Scott, or is Elorza going to be able to close the distance?
I think this is whoever has the last best week and whoever has the best turnout. I wouldn't be surprised to see this election turnout like 1984, when it was 121 votes. So separating Fred Lippitt from Joe Paolino, it went to the mail ballots. Very similar election in 1990 when the first round of the Buddy Cianci Redemption Tour took place, and he won by a little over 300 votes. So I think this could be a late night at the Board of Elections.
Maureen, what are your notes on the race for mayor in Providence?
Well, I think everybody is thinking ABC, anybody but Cianci, and I think people are focusing on that. I think, obviously, it comes down to the ground game. And we have to remember, Angel Taveras is running. So there should be a ramp up in the Latino vote. But the question is, has Solomon been able to cut into that in any significant way? Similarly, on the East Side, I mean, those are Taveras and Elorza territory. So if they can hold together, it might push him over the top.
Elorza is a son of Guatemalan American immigrants, and when he was here, he described a pan-Latino vision. But we hear from some others in the Latino community that Dominicans might be less likely to vote for a Guatemalan American. What do you say, Scott?
You know, there's some divide, like for years in Rhode Island, under the radar again. There was a lot of real rivalry between Italian Americans and Irish Americans. And I think you see some of this with the Dominicans, who kind of like to think they're the new Irish and they're going to run urban centers. And we'll see just how that plays out. I still think the East Side is the most important. Solomon has to get at least 25% or so. Otherwise, those three wards on the East Side, wards 1, 2, and 3 from Fox Point over to the Pawtucket Line, really from the water, the Pawtucket Line, they're probably going to cast 20, even though it's only 15% of the population, they're probably going to cast 25 or 26% of the votes. So Elorza has to do well there. Buddy Cianci fears him more than Solomon.
Do you agree, Ted?
Yeah, I think Scott's analysis spot on, and it fits mine. I think in both this primary and the Democratic primary for governor, we haven't had polling of the general election yet, so it's made it easier for every candidate to argue they'd be strong in the fall, and we haven't been able to test that.
All right, we're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott.
Thank you.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And from WPRI.com, Ted Nisi.
Thanks, Ian.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, follow our On Politics blog at ripr.org. We'll have lots of content on primary night as the election closes.